Blog Talk Radio.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Jed Hopkins. Now, let's bust some pencils.
Good afternoon and welcome to Busted Pencils, fully lettered education talk. And this is where everybody in the coffee shop of Michael's looks around and goes, what do I get into today? Yes, we are broadcasting live from our new home in Michelangelo's on State Street in Madison, Wisconsin. It is Busted Pencils, fully lettered education podcast. My co-host, Jed Hopkins, is taking a break. And my special guest co-host today, Donna Vukelic-Selva. Donna, welcome.
Thanks, Sam. Great to be here.
And people listen to the show in the past, which we know we've got millions of listeners have already heard you. You've been a guest host. We invited you back. And how could you say no to the money that we are on this show?
It's impossible.
So listen, hey, we've got a great show today. We're going to talk about trending news. Our guest is coming in. And, of course, the show is something that everybody waits for every week. Who is going to be the Busted Pencils tool? First, just let me remind you, you too can participate. You can participate by calling 323-870-4076. That's 323-870-4076. And just as an announcement, people, if this interests you, you are also welcome to join our conversation too. In the news, check it out. Minimally effective music. And Indiana wants to know, where are all the teachers? Minimally effective music. What are we talking about there? What do you think?
I'd imagine like an orchestra rehearsal and she's dropping their bows. What's going on? People aren't doing their job music. I'm not really sure. What could that mean?
And that's what you think, right? If minimally effective music. Well, even if this is an education talk, move back into looking at music teachers. And if we look at Slate.com this week, there's a wonderful article
in
Slate.com that asks a simple question. Are some teachers being evaluated using scores of kids they didn't teach?
When you read that, you almost have to look at it a second time. Like, how can that be?
Yeah, like
how is that possible?
The question away should be, well, the answer is they shouldn't.
They shouldn't.
You go to Slate.com, you pull up, why are some being evaluated using kids they didn't teach by Alexander Neeson, and you will read paragraph upon paragraph upon paragraph of how this is happening. Now, let's point out, though, the minimally effective music and just point out the very first story. We take a teacher from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and this teacher, Mr. Pryor, found out that he was, quote, minimally effective. Okay.
And the thing about him is, remember, he had award-winning choirs, was known all over the state, and so I'm sure he was perplexed, as we were when we first read this. Why in the world was he being characterized?
Why minimally effective, right? And as you kind of jokingly said, breaking bows, loud kids, you know, I imagine a concert where parents run out screaming because the music's so
What's
happening out there? Instead, what we find out is when you read close to the Slate story, his scores on, well, not his, the scores of boys and girls in his school, not in his class. Kids that he doesn't have. So the scores and reading tests of children who he did not teach were used to calculate his, quote, effectiveness rating. So the music teacher is calculated as effective or not effective, or in this case, minimally effective, by test scores of children, not taking music tests, but taking math and reading tests, and not even in his class.
Not even in his class. It's beyond the pale when you think about it. So what in the world are they thinking? So it really came to me, it's so crazy, the testing mania country has come. If we're just testing for the sake of testing, and no way that's any kind of qualitative look at what this teacher is doing what his kids are learning, what the students are getting out of music. And so, I mean, I thought this has to be the Onion. And your first reaction is,
right.
They must have made this up. And you realize, no, they're happy to do this thing based not on actual performance or anything. And I find it pretty, yeah. And I know people are very upset about it because it shows you how off base this kind of need to assess, and not even assess in an authentic way, but just to test,
right.
Just for the sake of testing.
You know, and just to move on. We could spend too much time obsessing about it. But, you know, the solution that New Mexico is offering, standardized multiple choice music tests next year. Again, come on.
Idiotic.
Let's
anyone.
Look at the
yeah.
real issue here. Are,
yeah.
Do we care about how kids score on music tests and they're learning to perform with instruments? No, we want to see them have joy, love, and create.
And that's the kind of thing that you cannot test.
Right.
So many people have said for years that when you think about what makes a child engaged with school, it's that joy, it's that sense of learning. You don't test that. You can't put a little, you know, thing over their forehead or some kind of clip on their wrist to test that. And unless we get rid of this mentality that it's all measurable, then I think we're just going down the wrong path.
It's back to those tools, which, you know. Hey, I want to give you two numbers.
Okay.
We're going to spend a lot of time on this because our special guest is already there,
yeah.
I can see. He's actually in the coffee shop drinking coffee, getting himself all caffeine
awesome.
Up.
Yeah.
That would be
yeah.
cool. But I want to give you two numbers. Okay, the first number, 7,500.
7,500, okay.
The next number is 934. Okay.
The average family wage in Wisconsin, Governor
Walker
took over.
Yes, same. Is it that much? I don't think it's that. No, this is the proportion. In 2008, in Indiana, 7,500 teaching licenses were issued. This past 934 teaching licenses.
That,
okay.
That's nothing short of just really, really frightening.
Yeah, so if we look at this story from WSBT.com, and the story is Indiana schools report a shortage of teacher applications. And the reason, it's a really short story. You take a look at this and just look at the percentage of saying, you know, over those amount of years, how much that dropped. And what I think about this story is that we need to bring to everybody is for us to recognize this is not Indiana's problem.
Not Indiana's problem, yeah.
The idea, we're in teacher education. We see it firsthand.
Every...
Okay, so qualitatively, right, we know we can't generalize, but in our own program, we're down a third of students.
Yep.
Down the street at the UW, we hear about that. I know people at Penn State that talk about this. You know, the number that keeps coming up, you know, enrollment declines. Okay, I told a group that I was speaking to yesterday, actually the Kiwanis Club, which is a great
yeah.
rocking group
yeah.
in Madison, Wisconsin. But I talked to them. I said, you know, it's not as much the idea of, okay, there aren't as many people applying. That is a problem.
Right.
But occurring at the same time as the number of and or teachers literally because of dissatisfaction, and the number of teachers don't even finish 5 years
yeah.
and leave.
Yeah. And I can think of people that have come through, started out, did well, and said, you know, it's not me. The number of early retirees. Looking all around the state of Wisconsin, just as one example, is truly appalling. People who loved the profession, who loved what they were doing, who were good at what they were doing, really are being pushed off by all these different measures that have been taken in the schools. And so, you know, the writing's kind of on the wall. Like you said, this is not just Indiana. This
no.
is a nationwide
this
crisis.
It's a disaster. Yeah. It's a disaster waiting to happen because you're losing 30-year mentors, you can't get new people to apply into the profession. At some point, it's not going to be a shortage. It's going to be a dearth of
right.
people qualified to do, and this is what I'm saying, yes, this is the Wellness Club. I said, this is the most important job in the entire world, which is teaching our future children.
So
okay?
instead of saying we're
going to
put
right?
lots of federal money into training teachers, I think my fear is that they're going well then, and just people have no idea what they're doing. Put them in the schools, especially the schools with the poor kids, which they're already in.
Right.
And so that is the underlying we're going to see here.
Yeah.
Because if this were happening in healthcare, then they would be saying, well, we need to train more nurses. We need to train
more
physician
assistants
or whatever. I mean, I'm going to do that. The schools are going to just say, let them just stew in their own juice. Who's getting hurt, once again, is the kids, which is the future, as you know.
And that's the point which people start to understand when they start attacking teaching and start attacking public education, that you're attacking kids.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't care if you have a beef with the teacher, but speaking of attacking kids, okay, Troy LaRivier, principal extraordinaire from Chicago. We've talked to him in the past. We met him at NPE. Okay, just so that everybody, headlines last week coming out of Chicago. Okay, last year or the year before, I forget, 50 schools closed. Okay,
right.
So you would think this year there's going to be some good news coming from Chicago. Instead, Mayor Rahm Emanuel puts out the announcement that we are going to slash, burn, get rid of 1,400 positions, teaching, aid, academics, you name it, 1,400 positions are going to be cut. And Rahm's answer is, she's so bad.
Wonder where his kids go to.
But, you know, the reason why... The reason why we got Troy on is, though, is that Troy went and he's more than a principal. He's a principled principal.
Exactly. Quite unusual.
Extremely unusual. And Troy wrote a great piece that says, why does Rahm Emanuel put business ahead of our children, that appeared in the Chicago Tribune? Okay? And he asked some great questions. And Troy, I just want to say hello. Are you there? And to Busted Pencils, thanks for coming back.
Hey, what's up? Thanks for having me. I am here and on a very bad connection, so I hope we're able to get through this.
We will always get through it. I just want to remind people, though, a little bit of your background. I'm not going to give that huge bio that you gave me, but just so everybody understands, Troy is a Chicago Public School principal, a parent of a Chicago Public School student, and Chicago Public School graduate, and according to Troy, Troy is working for the day when he can focus on student learning without being undermined by politicians and businessmen. And darn it, Rahm Emanuel has just decided, Troy, no, he's going to get in your business, and you said, back off, bud. What's the deal? Why 14 positions, and why do you believe that that number doesn't need to exist?
It doesn't need to exist because well, we have to start with the way they frame it, and then we'll back up from there. The way this administration frames it is that we have a pension crisis, that if it were not for our need to pay into the pension system, we could have more money to invest in classrooms. And so there's two approaches that, you know, I take in, you know, addressing this, I guess political propaganda is what I call it. First is that, you know, you can't juxtapose teacher pensions against a classroom investment because when you're talking about a classroom investment, what are you talking about investing in? What is the number one expense of any classroom? It's the salary and benefits package that you put together to attract decent teachers into the classroom and into your district in the first place. There's nothing that comes close in terms of importance and level of funding than the salary and benefits package that you put together to attract a decent teacher in the classroom. You know, saying that juxtaposing pensions against classroom investments is like saying, it's like the Chicago Bulls saying, you know, we would have money to invest in a better team, but we have to put all this money in the player's salary. Right, that makes absolutely, you know, anybody who pays attention to sports at all knows that makes absolutely no sense. That the number one investment that you have to make to field a competent, skilled, well-performing team is the investment you put in the player salaries. And at the same time, anybody with a mind, anyone who spent any time trying to hire a good teacher and find good teachers in a district knows that the most important expense that we can provide for, and ensuring that our kids get the classroom experience that they need and deserve is the salary and benefits that we put forth to attract great people into our classrooms. So that's number one. So the way they frame it on its face is ludicrous. Second, they say they have a pension crisis. We don't have a pension crisis. We have a priorities crisis. They frame it as if pensions were the only thing that, and classroom expenses are the only thing that on the budget item. Like, that's the only thing that money has been spent for. They have spent money. They have spent $10 million on furniture for central offices. They have spent $20 million on a principal professional development program that is now under federal investigation. They have spent $34 million on a preschool program that ended up, half the money is just going to pay interest to double the investor profit from investing in the program. Let me explain this. This is one of the more devious things they've done. So they have this thing where they've expanded pre-K and they borrowed $17 million to do it. And they told the investors, and all three investors just happen to be Rahm Emanuel campaign contributors. They told the investors, we'll pay you $34 million in return, but we'll only pay you the $34 million, and this is how they sell it to the public. They'll only get the $34 million, double their investment, if the kids in pre-K outperform the kids who did not get pre-K. Well, that's a done deal. We already know how that's going to turn out. Evidence has already proven that the kids in pre-K are going to outperform the kids who don't get pre-K. That's like you hiring a plumber and him telling you that the bill's going to be $5,000 and you saying, well, I'll give you $10,000 if it doesn't leak. Who offers someone double their investment if the product does what it's supposed to do? Nobody is that reckless with their own money, but Rahm Emanuel will be that reckless with the taxpayer dollars of Chicagoans time and time again. $340 million on a subpar custodial company. Almost $200 million in extra interest on a toxic swap deal that Rahm Emanuel's appointed board chairman got CPS into several years ago. And they're not talking about not paying these debts. They want to pay those, but they don't want to pay the debt that they owe to pensions. So it's a choice of how they want to frame the crisis, and they decided to frame the crisis around pensions and not their own lack of adequate priorities in their spending habits.
But, Troy, now, and they do that, though, and let's be honest, they do that because they can then move it one more space forward and say it's not just – it's the teacher, greedy teachers who want these pensions. It's their fault, then, that we have to get rid of these 1,400 jobs, because it plays right into that narrative. Do you agree with that, or is that pushing it?
Yeah, that's definitely part of the narrative, you know. A guy, in response to the op-ed you mentioned earlier, posted a comment that said the same thing. There's these greedy teachers, and their average salary is $71,000. And I looked at the government statistics. You know, a salary of $52,000. For a family of five would qualify you for governmental assistance as a low-income family, $52,000. So the average teacher's salary is about $18,000 above qualifying for low income. You know, greedy teachers is like an oxymoron. It makes absolutely no sense. And that's the average salary. That's the average salary. A beginning salary is actually less than what will qualify you as low income and then qualify your family for governmental assistance under the federal poverty guidelines. And so, you know, this greedy teachers sort of theme is just as ludicrous as this idea of pensions versus classroom investment. They make no sense when you actually look at the facts and the evidence behind the comment.
So given that Chicago's been under the gun for many years, as have our school systems here in Wisconsin, what does this mean concretely? Like, you're a principal, what is this going to mean for your school to be losing more and more staff, faculty? Just give us a sense of what's going to look like on the ground.
So the way I like to frame it, and it's the way I look at it when I'm budgeting, is that there are two broad areas of the budget. There's things that you have in place to have your school functional. You know, teachers in a classroom, for example, regardless of class size, there should be a teacher. You know, there may be 40 kids in the class, but there's a teacher there. There has to be some kind of curricular program. There has to be a basic administrative staff just for the school to be functional. That's the first phase or the first broad area. But we want to be more than functional. We want to be effective. We want to be excellent. And if we want to be effective and excellent, then there's another broad category for effective and excellence that contains four subcategories. The first being, if we want to be effective, we want to have strong, consistent, thoughtful teacher professional development. And that means paying someone to provide that professional development, preferably someone in-house who can do it consistently each day, each week, over time, so that teachers actually get something out of it. So that's number one. Number two, reduction in the student-teacher ratio. That is also an expense that we engage in. That's a purchase that we make and buy another position so that we can reduce the ratio of student to teacher. Third, we want to have targeted interventions for students who are either at risk of falling behind or falling further behind. So that's an adult, a skilled adult that we hire to provide those services. And three, we want to have someone who addresses climate and culture issues, a counselor, a dean of students, to help our students and our staff create a climate and culture that's most conducive to learning and healthy social growth. And so to get back to your question, when you cut a budget, it means that positions have to be dropped. And those positions provide those services that take a school from being functional to being excellent. And so you have a choice to make. Are you going to sacrifice and let someone go who's helping your school to become a better place in terms of its culture and climate? Are you going to let someone go who is providing intervention services to students who are at risk? You know, you go through those four categories, and you have to make a decision about where students will sacrifice. When they talk about cutting positions, that means that person provided a service to a student, and that person will no longer be there to provide that service to a student. It's not just about positions. It's about services that students once got that they will not get anymore.
That's the way to frame it there, Troy, and I wish more people would hear what you just said there,
yeah.
Because the other thing I'm thinking about as you're going through and labeling that is that, you know, and this is extreme, but, you know, a physical amputation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you do away with my arm, okay, it's at a serious expense. So when Rahm Emanuel comes out and says, look, we have to, first of all, frames it as that false dichotomy between pensions and this, but then also tries to downplay the fact that it's going to have, you know, no effect and or limited effect in the classroom, you point out and say, look, every time as a principal, I have to make a decision as to whether or not I'm going to have this person or that person. Making an either-or decision on that means that I'm going to provide students less of something every time you make that decision. Donna, you had?
No, I think it's interesting also to look at, given these increasingly draconian cuts, does this mean that Rahm and his buddies are going to back off with the testing? Because, you know, you're looking at this situation where you have, as you've noticed, increasing testing, but scant resources to do what you need to do in a place like Chicago. So, you know, I look at it and I think, like we talked about with the situation in Indiana, fewer teachers going into teaching. this kind of situation sets up the situation where in the future people aren't going to want to go into teaching. If they feel like they're in a classroom with 40 kids without the services they need to get the kids to where those kids need to be, you're going to see people bailing. And I think what we're going to see also is an increasingly segregated, I mean, it's already bad enough in many cities, where if you have money, you leave. You leave the public school system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've seen happening all across the world, really, all through Latin America and many places in Europe. People pay more to get a decent education, and the vast majority of people who can't pay for that are kind of left to their own devices.
Yeah. Well, hey, Troy, you know what?
Go ahead,
buddy. Yep, it's
all
yours.
A point, you provided further clarity on a point that I made earlier when I talked about providing a decent benefits and salary package to attract and retain the best teachers, but that's not the only thing you need. You need to have working conditions that are actually conducive to you feeling like, you know, you're being effective with kids. And reduced budgets begin to create the kinds of working conditions that make it less likely that you'll retain the best people. People who are skilled have options. They can go to places where the working conditions are better. And that means our children will be left with people who do not have options. And that's not who we want our children to be left with. And the second part is that people want to work in a place where they feel respected. You know, that's probably the number, it's probably just as or even more important as the previous conditions, that people want to feel respected. And in this climate of teacher bashing and over-testing and the connection of the testing with performance evaluations, people begin to feel less and less respected. And once again, the people who are skilled, who have options because they are skilled, our children will lose more and more of those people and be left with people who have less of a choice. And again, that's not the circumstance that we want our children to be left in, but that is the circumstance that's being created in Chicago. Principals are leaving left and right. Teachers are leaving left and right. Turnover is abysmal in many of the schools on the south and west sides, and our students, once again, are suffering the consequences of that lack of respect, that lack of a good work environment, and the threat of reducing the benefits package and the salary that brought people into the profession in the first place.
Well, Troy, hey, I want to thank you for the time. I know you're busy. I know CPS is down there scrambling, trying to keep you working, making sure that you earn that wage, that greedy principal salary that you're working for. So, from Donna and Tim, I want to thank you for being on the show. And again, hopefully, we will reconnect with you, you know, many times. And I know people have said this in the past that they don't want to see another Secretary of Education coming out of Chicago. I seem to think that there's at least one more person in Chicago who we could give Secretary of Education to, Donna, and that'd be Troy.
I would second that anytime. That'd be awesome.
Troy, have a great day, buddy.
Hey, take care.
Then I hope you guys, all of you, have a beautiful, blessed day. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, we'll move in there, but just a closing thought there. I mean, you can't really say it better than what Troy said is, the idea that when you reduce staff, when you reduce resources anytime. Okay, but here we're talking about 1,400 staff. That's
huge
teachers.
Consequences for that.
As a principal, that's why we wanted to talk to Troy, because he has that direct responsibility in a classroom then to say, here's the budget that I have. Here's what I can now provide my students this year based on the budget I have.
And he really knows. He's seen it firsthand.
Yeah. And so when it's a decision to say, do I hire a counselor? Do I hire a teacher? There's a loss when you have to be forced to make that either-or decision.
In your medical analogy before, I mean, think about somebody has two serious health problems, really, really serious, and you say, well, we can treat one, but we can't treat the other. So insane.
Exactly.
That's something that a decent society does not do to its future.
Well, just, you know, it's negativity just seems to be seeping through the Busted Pencils Fully Limited Education box today. But as
maybe
we're coming,
it's made in Wisconsin today.
I don't know. Well, our wonderful announcement of Scooter becoming president. And for those of you listening across the country, we would just like to share with you our wonderful governor. So please. We understand.
Get him out of our hair.
Yeah, take him.
Torpedo him during the campaign.
Be glad to have him. Hey, you are listening to Busted Pencils Fully Leaded Education Talk. No, this is the time of the show where we get down. Last couple of minutes, we like to have a little bit of fun, but we also like to point out something, maybe. Jed and I have talked about this. What is a tool? We always talk about tests and the fact that tools as tests don't really tell us what they should. But then the other idea is, a tool is kind of a person who does something foolish.
Yes.
At a similar thing. And we like to end the Busted Pencils show by finding somebody out there who had some toolish type behavior for the week.
It seems like it's never too hard for you to find someone. What does that say, right?
Yeah, there is never a shortage of trying to find our tools. But I just thought this.
And this week is a doozy.
And this week is a doozy. And you might go, could it be the whole thing? But, I'm going to refer to, and this is not the tool, but the author of the piece in the Jacobin.
Right.
Okay? Lois Weiner wrote a piece. What's
awesome.
Wrong with the AFT? Lois is not our tool of the week.
Lois is a longtime hero, I think. Yeah. Heroine of both of ours.
Heroine,
yes,
right.
Yes.
It's the subject, and we're talking about AFT. And for the listener that missed it, AFT endorsed Hillary Rodham Clinton as their presidential candidate this week.
And just a reminder, this is July.
This is July.
We're months and months away from the actual primary, from the caucuses, from all the kind of uproar that comes with the electoral season. It's an odd time, to say the least.
It's an extremely odd time. And so, our tool of the week is we're going to move this to Randy Weingarten, the head of AFT. And people say, Busted Pencils just gave the tool of the week to a union person. Last week you were picking on Republicans. Hey, this show gives tools to people who are tools.
We are.
Okay? You earn the tool of the week. You get it. I don't care if you're a union member or a Republican.
If you deserve it, you deserve it.
You deserve it. You deserve it. And what we're saying here is that maybe the union membership might have picked him. Hillary, maybe. Although, as people are pulling out and you look on the Facebook pages, the discussion amongst membership
highly doubtful.
I wasn't asked.
Right.
And that's the issue. And the fact that unions have been trying to rebuild themselves as credible, legitimate organizations who represent what's best and not politics as usual, this strikes. And if I want to read the one specific point,
because
this is from Lois, what is most destructive in AFT's endorsement of Clinton is that it has disempowered members at precisely the moment when we most need revitalized teachers' unions to save a system of education that is being destroyed as a public good by powerful elites and the politicians they control.
So well said.
That's it, and that's what gets Randy the tool of the week, because it's not recognized. She may have wonderful qualities and great whatever it is the why she remains as the president, but this idea
she should be fully
cognizant of the fact that we need unions' imagery not to look like supporters of the power status quo, and that strikes of this.
It really does, and I think this idea that I think a lot of people have questioned why is she being coronated in a certain sense by certain groups. And without really, I find it highly doubtful that most membership in the AFT was even aware of this.
Right.
It's July. It's the summer months. And people, given the number of teachers that I know, would have said, I think the overwhelming response that I've heard is, we didn't even get a chance to think about this. Let us wait and see what happens. Let's hear what people have to say, and let's be more democratic about who we make our decision as a huge organization to endorse.
So there it is.
Closing
words right there. So your tool of the week, Randy Weingarten, congratulations. You have the Busted Pencils Fully Leaded Education Talk Tool of the Week Award for maybe jumping your membership's senses of what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
So, hey, as always, Donna, first of all, thank you for filling in for Jed Hopkins, the co-host from across the pond. I really appreciate that. I think Jed Hopkins owes you something special.
I think he does. Hope he's listening.
Hope he's listening. So, and for the rest of you, thank you for listening. Make sure that you follow us, though, on BustedPencils.com. If you're out there listening, you're thinking, this is a show I need in my city on a syndicated radio show, you want to go to mx2media.com/BustedPencils. Make sure you follow the show at Busted Pencils. Make sure you look at Instagram, too. We've got all the social media here at Busted Pencils. We are just absolutely there. And if you remember the ending, how we end every single show, Donna, but Jed usually says this, but Donna, it's up to you to deliver the final blow. What do we tell people?
We say, keep busting pencils.